You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Okay, so it's a beautiful day, sunshiny, gorgeous, and sometimes we just get in bad moods, don't we? You know, we were talking yesterday about anxiety, and those people with anxiety, if you are one of them, you know that you can have an anxious feeling. And if it's something you live with all the time, it can mask itself as just a bad mood, irritability. So how much more so your children when they're experiencing these things, when they're experiencing anxiety. So we were talking yesterday about the email that we got from a listener, Cindy, and about her 15-year-old daughter and the anxiety that her daughter actually came to her. And as I said yesterday, what an awesome, awesome thing for her to do, to actually come in and say, what would you say? This was her exact quote. What would you say if I told you I had anxiety? So we have this this ability to look into someone else's life for just a snapshot. And thank you, Cindy, for allowing us that moment to look into your daughter's life and to be able to in your life and to see how it how a family will deal with this and what they will do. And we talked about yesterday, we'll do a little recap. And you can all log on breadboxmedia.podbean.com, and you can look on, see yesterday's podcast, but also you can call 573-4BREAD-4 or text 573-4BREAD-4 with ideas and maybe some how you went through this yourself, or perhaps you were the one who went through it when you were a teenager. Perhaps you're a teenager now going through it. So the take-home message that we kind of threaded out throughout our whole entire program is that Cindy did the right thing by right off the bat talking to her daughter, being open with her daughter. And so three things. Once her daughter brought it up, she didn't minimize it. So that's number one, that she acknowledged it. She validated it. She noted it. She just, that is more important than you will ever know. Sometimes for some children and some adults, and you know if you're like this, sometimes just an eyebrow raised or an odd look or a furrowing of the brows is enough for someone to stop talking, for them to stop bringing their thoughts forward. It's intimidating. There are those people who are so sensitive, and if your child is one of these people that's very sensitive, then this could be something for you to take to heart. There are some people that are so sensitive, not too sensitive. Remember, it's really important. Semantics are very important. If someone feels something differently or more or less than you do, it's not necessarily that they are wrong and you are right, that you're correct, or that what you feel is the way someone else should feel and vice versa. So we do have a spectrum, and there are things that are, quote, too, if someone cries at everything, well, they may be depressed or they may be ill. So, you know, again, this is all common sense stuff here. But your particular child or your particular spouse may be sensitive. And we don't put the two in front of it. The T-O-O. We do not do that, because if you tell someone you're just being too sensitive, then you minimize. You're telling them about five things in one statement. You're telling them, one, I've just discounted what you feel. So you've minimized and discounted what they feel. Number two, there's something wrong and defective with your perspective of the situation. Number three, that your reaction is aberrant. So the person is left with, if you're a child, oftentimes we saw yesterday that mute or selective mutism where people just stop talking, they just won't converse, happens a lot with little children, but it happens a lot when they just feel like they cannot be heard, that they are called too sensitive. So therefore, they second guess and doubt. So you're growing an adult in the embryonic form, in the small form. You're growing an adult who's going to second guess themselves all the time, who is not going to be confident in their own decisions, and who's going to feel like they must rely on someone else to feel for them, to be their touchstone. Is this the right appropriate reaction? Is this the appropriate reaction? And you can go out further then and extrapolate and say to yourself, well, then what will that be in their normal everyday lives? How will that play out? How will that play out when they get older and they have romantic relationships? They're never going to be able to feel good in their own skin about how they feel about something. So that when someone tells them, in an abusive situation, oh, well, you're just being too sensitive. That's familiar. That's home to them. Or let's say they get talked into something, premarital sex, or they get talked into risky behavior by a spouse or not a spouse. Well, you're just being too paranoid. And they don't have that solid ground inside themselves to go, maybe, but no, this is how I feel. So how you react to a child who has anxiety now or who has a problem now is very, very important. Even if it turns out that there's nothing there, or it's just very situational, or it's very fleeting, even if that turns out to be the case, you will need to continue on that. Always remind yourself to be open, acknowledging, don't minimize. It's really, really important. And you know it's important for you as well. So we got a follow-up from Cindy, which is very nice. Thank you, Cindy, very much. And I hope that she's listening today. We got a follow-up from Cindy, so we're going to go into that today. We're going to go into not only more detail of what occurred in her daughter's life, but in her household as well, that might be contributing and most probably is contributing to her daughter's feelings of anxiety. You know, I want to go over before we do that. We'll do that in the next segment. I think we'll read you the email that was sent to me. We were talking yesterday about the different ways that the different things about and manifestations about anxiety in teenagers. One thing that I want you to remember, that you could begin help anywhere. There are hotlines that you can look at, and we'll see if we can hunt up a number for you. But you have local community healthcare centers. There's always a local community healthcare center. There's always school counselors, guidance counselors, your general practitioner, psychologist. If you have, you may have to have a referral, and you might have to see your GP first. So now remember also that you want to go with like the least invasive first. Sometimes, you know, whether you have to know if your child is a teenager, chances are, unless they've just moved, they've been at their school for a while, you have a feel for school counselors, because some are not all created equal, right? And what I mean by that is some are very by the book, and someone shows this symptom, that symptom, then all of a sudden it's anxiety. Or you all know in your own life and with your friends how many people are, the school counselors might think that they are ADHD when they're really not ADHD. they may have the symptoms of certain things, but it's not necessarily something that has to be funneled into a tract that's going to be certain medication use. So it's the same thing. You use your common sense. Maybe you have friends, adult friends, or your child has friends that you think are come from a background that you're, that you feel an alignment with, and you can maybe talk to the mother or the father and find out who they saw, what kind of road they went down, if there's any tips that they would have in exploring this further. You can just make an appointment. If you happen to have a counselor yourself, know a counselor, you can go to your priest first. But if whoever you go to minimizes a situation, sometimes it's not just being a teenager. And you all have a special, special burden, because being a teenager in itself can be anxiety provoking. So we have to know, when is it just being a teenager and when is it a little more? Always err on the side of acknowledgement and support and find out. As I said, you have no idea what goes on in your child's life, even if you think you do, even if you think they tell you everything. It could be something they hear, they see, they experience, they're witness to, that they just either don't want to talk about or feel they cannot talk about it because they might be betraying someone else, or someone might get in trouble, or someone's made them promise. So remember, you were a teenager too. We're going to get into Cindy, and Cindy, we're going to get into your email when we come back from our break. But I want you all to just open up, do a landscape check of your home, your family, your situation, or even your own childhood. I am Dr. Michelle, 573-4BREAD-4.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're listening today at Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. So we're talking about teenage anxiety. We're going to get into this email from Cindy. She did a follow-up, and it's very detailed. We talked yesterday. She was listening yesterday because she texted us, so asking her just a few more little things and some little fill-in information that would be helpful for us. And before I do that, remember also that anxiety is, along with it, panic disorder is also an anxiety disorder. And so when you have anxiety, imagine like if you panic, imagine it's just a little bit of low level of panic. It's fear-based, but you can't really look at someone and go, okay, so what are you afraid of? There's so much involved. Anxiety, it's like which comes first, the chicken or the egg. Self-esteem alone can, or low self-esteem alone, it's like a feedback loop. Low self-esteem can provide anxiety in certain situations, and anxiety reinforces low self-esteem. So that's a really important reality to think about. The other thing I want you to think about is how do you open up these conversations with people? I'm not quite sure how Cindy opened up. She responded quite well when her daughter actually came to her and said that she was experiencing, what would you say if I told you I was experiencing anxiety? But sometimes you can just, rather than give an open-ended or something that's easy to say yes and no to, like, are you feeling anxious, or those kinds of things? You might want to say something like, talk to me about the things that are bothering you, or talk to me about what's hard. That was somebody's suggestion that I saw, that I don't know whether I would actually use that myself, not because I think it's just not necessarily my style, but talk to me about what's hard. Or sometimes I will just say, talk to me. And open that up and allow that without being indictive or commanding, allow the person to open up themselves. Sometimes with kids, things like movies or books or different situations that they're interested in, celebrity in situations, can be kind of icebreakers. They can kind of start conversations. Another thing is being a role model for them, showing them, not telling them, but showing them how you deal with anxiety and stress. And also to know that they're not alone, of course. All right, so let's take a look at this email from Cindy. It says, "Hi, Dr. Michelle. Thanks for addressing my questions on your show. Here's a little more info that you were wondering about. When my daughter Susan says, 'What would you say if I told you I had anxiety?' I asked her how it affected her." Beautiful. "She said that sometimes her chest gets tight. She dreaded summer camp from December until camp time. She gets anxious about making phone calls and sending emails. I'm a phonophobe too sometimes, so I get that. But I asked why she is nervous about email. She said, quote, 'What if I use the wrong email address? What if I spell something wrong?' Unquote. She has friends with anxiety, and that is what prompted her to speak up about it. As far as her friends with anxiety, I know one of them lost her mother a few years ago. That was before Susan was good friends with her. I don't know the story of the other friend. We had the first therapy appointment yesterday. The therapist had me come into the office with them at first. My daughter is an introvert and wasn't opening up too much while I was in the room. Last fall, there was a lot of strife in our marriage. My husband was verbally abusive with yelling and name-calling. I could tell that it troubled my daughter at the time. It was one of the first things that came up in the session. She was afraid that we would split up and it would devastate her. She also mentioned that she was anxious about college. I know she has mentioned being anxious about college before. Her friends all seem to know what they want to, quote, be when they grow up, unquote. Susan doesn't know. I've tried to tell her that's okay. While I was still in the room, the therapist asked if she was anxious about leaving home for college, and she shyly nodded. I left the room soon after this. Following the session, the therapist came out with her and gave me a basic overview of the issues that came up. She's an introvert and thinks that people misinterpret this. She's nervous about initiating conversations with others. He guided her to smile and give compliments. She is also very self-conscious. The therapist said there is a bit of depression there as well. Some situations that might have something to do with it. Last year, when she was out of town, we decided that we would be moving to a bigger house. She was involved in the final decision process, but felt that it was during the moving process, her cat ran away. Okay, well, that's just sentence structure, but we get it. During that process, her cat also ran away. My grandfather died last year. That means her great-grandfather died. My other grandparents are on decline. She has a boyfriend, kinda. They hold hands at school and have gone to McDonald's together once. They do text now. She is top of her class. She is the top 10 in her class, so there might be an extra academic pressure on her. I've not noticed any real behavior changes in her, though. She's very crafty. She spends a lot of free time drawing or sewing. When she needed a birthday present for a friend, she crocheted a cinch sack. She does have genetics stacked against her. I've been diagnosed with cyclothymia and depression with anxiety at one point, and my husband dysthymia. There is no major illness in our core family, but my grandparents are old and getting worse. We see them regularly, so she's afraid of that. Well, I hope this gives you a little more insight. Thanks, Cindy." All right, so there's so much with this, so much. Cindy is listening now. Hi, Cindy, and thank you so much for writing all this detail. And she did text us that she felt that her daughter felt the decision about the house was really made without her input. She forgot to put that part in. She left that part out, and that her cat ran away. So I want to go general and then specific when we look at this thing for Cindy. And hopefully you all see some of you and your children or you and your life in this. I know that you will. So we see here, just in a general sense, we look at it and it's like looking at a painting and you say the general sense, it's a landscape. Well, what kind of landscape is it? Is it stormy? Is it sunny? Is it a tropical? Is it a frozen? What is it? So here, this landscape is one of loss. Immediately, it's the big pervading theme is loss. And that's, again, that's the general landscape. That's a sweeping statement that is not necessarily describing her personality. But it is saying that Susan has had to deal with a lot of loss, and she's afraid she's going to have to deal with more loss. She's a young person. She's 15. She is thinking about college, which is a few years away. But just think about it. In 3 years, 4 years, 3 years, she'll be in college, maybe two. She'll be at 2.5. She'll be in college. Well, think about what 3 years ago, how old she was then. She was 12. So at 12, you're still a little child. And 3 years before that, she's 9. And the reason I'm saying that is if you look at the increments of how much has transpired, how she changed from 9 to 12, how she changed from 12 to 15, a lot of changes in those years, big, big milestones and mile markers in those years. And the reason we're bringing that up is because she is having to deal with the security of home, the home that she knew, the people that she knew in the home. Everything was the way it was. And there were threats from every corner. Death, possible divorce, change in house, a cat runs away and is not seen again. These are all very devastating to someone. As an adult, after you have accumulated your share of change, it's not as difficult. And it still bothers you, of course. I bet you, Cindy, that you had some sad feelings about that cat running away. And it was stressful for you to move. So here she feels that life is going on without her, that the life is changing without her. She's an introvert, so we know that. So we're going to take the landscape and kind of draw it in and get a little bit closer and closer into her particular personality. Now, again, only from this email. This is not diagnosing or treating her. This is something that when you go to your therapist or when you go to your and you can go to all of them. You can say rosaries with her if that's particularly what you all do or that's part of your family culture. You can do a lot of things. You can do a novena. The Infinite Prague Novena is great. It's fast and you can do it every day before dinner, and it can be on something concrete. It can, you know, there's something that can maybe focus her into hope, and that's a lovely thing too. So the other part of the landscape is that she has all these fears about loss. She also has fears about future. But one of the things I want to focus on when we come back is the fact that she's afraid of the small things now, spelling something wrong, getting the wrong email address. This is very indicative of anxiety and how anxiety tends to funnel down into something like poor decision making. So we'll talk more about that. 573-4BREAD-4. You can email dmlive@redboxmedia.com.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. host, Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. You're walking with me on this road. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can also email me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. And Cindy, you emailed me, and thank you very much. And it's always so helpful. So, and thank you for your text. So we have a little bit better context of all these different things that Susan was experiencing. So now that we have kind of the landscape, we have this landscape of loss, we have a landscape of fear, of course, and fear of loss. So you have loss and then you fear more loss. And all that comes down to, once you have those kinds of systematic hits in your life and in her life, again, think about it. She's 15, but everything is very concentrated when you're 15, just like it's more concentrated when you're 9. You have all these amazing, you amass so much in such a short period of time. 9 to 12, 12 to 15, 15 to 18, there's huge things go on during that time. Lots of rapid growth there, lots of rapid maturity. But you also have you're very vulnerable at those points. You're very vulnerable to fear and loss. Now, we need to really address, and we may have to go into some of this tomorrow a bit, but we do really need to address the strife in the house, because that is fundamental. That is fundamental, strife in the house. And we're going to spend a good amount on that. And that's for you, Cindy, because that particular incident or set of incidents, you said last year there was a lot last fall. So that means over a prolonged period of time. Now, when you say my husband was verbally abusive and yelling and name calling, my guess is that wasn't just last fall. There wasn't just one incident and that was it throughout your entire 15 years of marriage. I'm assuming you're married to the same man, that her father. So since you referred to him as her father, I think. So that is really big, because what happens is that leaves a person in an unstable environment. So the children, in some respects, when they weave in and out of this throughout their lifetime, they may hear some, they may hear more, they may hear less, they may hear specifics, they may just hear some muffled yelling behind closed doors. But there's a combination when you are in an abusive relationship where the verbal abuse isn't just a getting mad. It's not just somebody lost their temper and just yelled as they're, you know, the trash piled up one too many times and they yell and then later they rectify that yelling. But a verbally abusive and name calling is something that's, it's black and white, and it's both the extremes, and it's very destabilizing, because on the one hand you've got the family structure and all the other friends' family structures and learning about what family structures are all about and about respect. And they want and need respect themselves. And somewhere in there, they're not rationalizing in their brain. But if you have a husband who in the one moment is saying to the family, love and respect each other. And in family situations, or you're all together and you're laughing and you're happy and things are great. And then in the other respect, unpredictably, you're being called names and the children hear that. It can be very destabilizing, because it leaves a young girl confused, because a young girl, a girl will learn is learning how to be a woman from both of you. She mainly learns how to be a woman from her father, in the respect that who she will marry will be actually some kind of form of the two of you, but some kind of form replicating the way that her father treated her mother. Most of us, it's a very well documented that even the people who are determined to say, to be in a situation that is nothing like their parents, often, that doesn't mean always, there are those people who do not do it. They are determined and they do not repeat it. And they're out there. And there's a pretty good percentage. But there are a lot of people who are determined not to repeat the pattern in their own family, and they live to repeat it. It's so ingrained in them. It's all they know. It's almost like hearing a language. If you heard a language spoken in, let's say, a beloved grandparent speaks Italian, and you hear that in the background of your life, even though you do not speak Italian, and maybe your parents don't speak Italian, but you hear that. You go somewhere else when you're 20 years later, and it'll be like music to your ears. It'll be familiar. Well, that's what happens in these situations. It becomes familiar. So that is a big element, is a strife in the marriage. Then you have a situation. I told you I wanted to go back to this little, the problem of like using a wrong email address. When we have anxiety, we tend to feel a loss of control. And if it ratchets up to panic, you know what that's like, because panic by definition is a complete loss of control. You panic, you run into the forest fire, you do all kinds of stuff. You endanger yourself because you are in complete loss of control. Well, anxiety, you have a lot of feelings of loss of control. You feel like you will, if you have social phobia, you'll feel like you will embarrass yourself, or that you will not be able to speak, or you'll say something, or you'll laugh uncontrollably, or you'll wet your pants or something. There's a fear of losing control. And when you panic, you can actually lose control. And when you are very, very anxious, you lose control as well, because you use control over being able to connect what you want to say and what you're going to say. And, you know, we've all been there. Anxiety is not something that is an illness in and of itself. We're all going to experience anxiety. We should experience anxiety. Anxiety is important. It gives us a pause. It makes us evaluate. It also shows us our own weak points and our own vulnerabilities. Anxiety in a situation is normal. In certain situations and a certain range of anxiety is very, very normal. There's no such thing, despite of what you might see on any given movie or television program. There is no such thing as someone who just has no anxiety. And as a matter of fact, when someone takes a lie detector test, let's say a criminal, the person who is completely devoid of conscience or self-consciousness, who is a more effective criminal, will not register the normal anxiety manifestations on the skin that most people would. So a little anxiety is completely normal. But what happens, though, if you have this, if someone is very fearful of change because there's just been one too many things, they just can't take another small change. Little things will start bothering them. And then it gets into little phobias. Like, what if I use the wrong email address? What if I spell something wrong? That's something that can be very well, I don't know what your therapist is using, but one thing that is very helpful, the mindfulness working with the child. There's a whole area called mindfulness, which helps calm the person down. It also helps put things in a perspective. And there's also cognitive behavioral therapy, which is also good because it just has the person take their situation and then look at it rationally, so that she can look at these things and see what is really in front of her, rather than having this be completely symbolic. I'm just going to use a very general thought here. This isn't exactly what it is, but it's almost like saying, okay, so what if I do use the wrong email address? What will happen? Well, if I use the wrong email address, it'll come back to me. Show me that I didn't get it wrong. Well, then what can I do? I can recheck it, make sure it's right. What if I spell something wrong? And that's another thing, of course. But it's all about then someone's perceived, how someone looks at you, your own perceived notion about what others think. Now we're getting a little bit too detailed here, because these are all the details, and that's fine, but we want to get to the core, because the core is about her feeling like she can let down. that Susan feels that she can sink into her chair, that she can have her feet on the ground. And so to do that, we have to look at the big things and the little things. And you can attack it from either end. And it sounds in one respect from what you told me about the first session, there's like little practice things that are happening, you know, smiling more, complimenting. And that's nice because it kind of like starts growing that part of you. On the other hand, you can take it from the other end, or you can do both at the same time. And that is working on some of the core issues. If there's strife in the marriage, seek help yourself, not only for the strife, but perhaps on how to discuss it in your own family. And if you'd like, we can go into that at some point too, where you do have, you know, a discussion. So it's not just, well, that's the way it is. You want to be able to find that balance where you acknowledge that there's a strifeful situation in the home and that you're aware of it, that you're working on it, and that you're aware that it can affect the rest of the family without giving them too much detail. I'm Dr. Michelle, 573-4-BREAD-4, call or text. See you after the break.
You are listening to BreadBox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. BreadBox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you can reach me, text or call 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. We are walking on this road together, and we are talking about anxiety in teens, but really this applies to anxiety for everybody. However you have it, whyever you have it, where it came from, those are all important questions. However, when you're in the middle of feeling it, and she said, Cindy told us, that Susan, when she said, well, how do you experience it? Susan said she feels a tightness in her chest. And that's sometimes. And she dreads things. So here's this 15-year-old girl who's creative, smart. She's in the top 10 of her class. These pictures are pretty frequent. There are different kinds of pictures of the way that we all seem to manifest things. So this is a nice, Susan is showing us a kind of a classic, displaying kind of a classic person who is a very smart, who can be, I wouldn't call her an overachiever. Doesn't sound like it. Maybe she is, but she has high standards. She has her own, whether it's self-competitive or she likes achieving. So because she's in the top 10. And in order to stay in the top 10, she's got to have a certain performance. She's got to be able to do certain things and keep bettering herself, keep topping herself. We know that with Olympics. We know that with everything else. It's just what you do. So she's very, she's good in school. She's in the top 10 of her class. So there's a little bit of a pressure there to keep that position going. She dreaded summer camp because she's dreading the newness. It sounds to me like Susan, again, this is all going to be borne out. I'm looking at this from an email and I'm taking the email, Cindy. It may not apply to Susan, everything, and I'm taking it and putting it out there for the general world as well to say that a lot of times this dreading, someone who has a lot of instability from the family of origin begins to dread those new experiences. Now, some people, again, are more sensitive than others. So you could have 5 kids, you could have 2 kids, and one of them is more sensitive. The other one is less sensitive, meaning not in a judgmental or qualitative way, but that one person, especially, you said she's very crafty, and she's very artistic. However she manifests that artistry, whether it's in crocheting and whether it's in painting or whether it's in her academics, she's an artistic person. She's integrated. She's very, she feels deeply. She sees things. And the more artistic, there's kind of a cliche, but it totally is true. The more artistic someone is, whether they draw or paint or not, they could be very artistic people and have a penchant for math. A lot of great musicians, if you really break down their stuff, it's very mathematical. So it's a matter of that their brain just happens to catch these things. And so when you open up to a world where you are able to be top 10 in your class in academics, and you're able to paint and draw and crochet, and you're able to see the world a certain way, your filters are very different. Things tend to bleed over. The colors are a little more intricate than they might be for someone else. You see the fine detail. So everything is a little bit more important to those particular kind of people, that personality type. This is where we don't want to say, I'm kind of going all over the board here because we're trying to get a lot into our last segment. Maybe we'll finish some of this up tomorrow too. But I want to stop here and reinforce that a little bit of everything, as the country song goes, is really a good thing, depending on your personality type. So if you happen to read a book on temperaments, if you happen to read a book on an artist, a famous artist, if you happen to read a self-help book, avoid the thought that this is the end-all be-all. Utilize them all. A little bit of thinking about temperaments and about how we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves, because our temperaments may be parts of a huge whole. And every once in a while, we may manifest or make famous a part of us, the artistic, sensitive, dramatic part. And then at another point in our life, that may shrink a little bit, although it is still there and it is utilized in perhaps the CEO part. All of a sudden, as you grew up, you became a marketing CEO. That doesn't mean that you don't have that other part of you. But we have to think of our temperaments, and in different situations, our temperaments come up in different ways. We can be leaders in one hand and followers in another. We can be strong and confident looking with our heads held high in one and cowering like a little puppy in another situation. So never pigeonhole and never put that on your child. You're this kind of person, or you don't do that kind of thing. But with Susan now, I think what we have to do is we have to get to a point where we look at the situation and start with, you could even draw this out if you like, start with in any way you want. You can do it in just a geometric shape form. You can do it in a people form. You can do it in just circles, but look, or just kind of morphed figures. It doesn't matter. You want to say, what is the foundation? What is the base? Like if you're looking at those, remember those little tumble rings that you had for your kids? They'd stack up, those stacking rings, and they'd form like a little round donut. They're like little round donuts, but they would form like a little pyramid. So look at your pyramid, your base, your biggest one at the bottom is the family structure. Is that unpredictable and unstable? Sometimes it's inflated, sometimes it's not, sometimes it's lopsided. You mentioned that you have cyclothymia. And you were diagnosed with depression, Cindy, and anxiety at one point. So cyclothymia by its very nature means cyclothymia, cyclothymic. Your moods and your feelings are up and down, up and down. You can be very anxious and hyper on edge one time, not really necessarily bipolar, but you can be very anxious and edgy on the one hand, and then kind of slip down into a depression on another. So we have to look at that and say that that's an important part too, because this is what she's growing up in. It does not mean to demean yourself or think that you're defective. You have cyclothymia. thank God you've got it diagnosed. So you know what's going on. Knowledge is power. You say that your husband has been diagnosed with dysthymia. Now, dysthymia, these are all kind. These are all psychiatric terms and medical terms, meaning like a dysregulation, a thymic, meaning kind of the mood, the temperament, the affect. So that he, you said, has the Eeyore syndrome and depression, which means kind of negative and depressed, not really the high, edgy, giddy part along with it. So that in itself can be very confusing to a child, especially if you don't know which one you're going to be greeted with. And that may be at a certain point, a time, a guided time where you sit down with your family when everyone's on board, you and your husband, with the help of a good professional. And you sit down and you say, you know, look, let's take a look at our family structure here, because we all love our family. And here's some of the problems that have come up that I know that have influenced you guys. And here's some of the situations that are just, you know, it's just what we live with. It's not a bad thing, but it does make things maybe a little bit more confusing. And you can talk about it in those kinds of terms. But you know what, we're going to run out of time. So I want to pay more attention here to you, Cindy, and to Susan as individuals. We're going to do that tomorrow. I want to reinforce that when you look at the tiny little things about seem tiny, but they're big to you at the time, because it could cause panic. People have been known who are not dyslexic in their everyday lives. If they have too much stress, a move, a change in job, maybe a death or an illness in the family all at one time, or a financial hit, they can all of a sudden start transposing numbers. And then they start second guessing their brain. Well, maybe I'm, you know, maybe something's wrong with me. Maybe I'm all of a sudden dyslexic. Maybe I have a problem. And they start getting scared. They give someone a phone number. Then they have to repeat it 10 times because they're afraid they gave them the wrong number. They're not hearing it right. They see evidence that they write things down wrong all the time, where it could be just a temporary glitch in the system, a temporary brownout, so to speak. So I want you to know that these things can all be ameliorated. They can all be worked with. They can all be managed. They can all be better. And sometimes it's a tweak here and a little tweaking there just to make things back into where the main donut in your little stacking rings is nice and firm and secure. You feel like at least it's like, just know what you have to work with. And if you know what you have to work with, it makes the rest of the things on top of that less scary. And it will for her too. But acknowledge the fact that she's had an awful lot of loss, an awful lot of change and potential change. So we will continue this tomorrow. Please, Cindy, write me more. DM live at redboxmedia.com. And all of you, I encourage you to write anytime. I am Dr. Michelle.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.